Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guests on today's podcast, joining me via Zoom from their home in Salt Lake County, are my friends Kate Kendrick and their non-binary child, Morgan. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Richard.
Morgan is 16. She's going by a pseudonym, which some of our guests do just to protect her identity. At a tender age in 2021, Morgan identified as non-binary and as they, them pronouns. And I will do my best to honor your pronouns, Morgan. And sometimes a mom or dad will be on the podcast and kind of talk about their queer kids, but it sometimes makes it even better if someone like Morgan joins us. So we hear both of your stories. Is this just a family story of love to understand a non-binary child? So our hope is if you are a parent or a local leader or part of the LGBT community, this story will help you not feel alone and not feel alone and not and feel more hope. Kate grew up in the LDS church and has been active for most of her life, but has recently decided not to participate in the church, which is the same as Morgan. So you ought to know this will partly be a story of sort of stepping away from the church, but Kate is not asking you, if you're active LDS, to step away from the church. This is more about trying to build bridges of understanding. This podcast platform is supportive of the church, but it's also supportive of everybody's individual journey and trying to still see us as the same human family and build bridges of understanding between those that stay and those that leave, because that's, to me, part of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's really brave of Morgan to be here. So I'd like to just kind of hug you through the Zoom camera, and it's really courageous for you to share your story that'll be part of this. And I'm glad you're alive, and I'm glad you're making your way forward, and you just have a great life of you ahead of you, Morgan.
So I want to help all the others who are in my situation who don't. Mm-hmm. Get the kind of life that I have.
That's great. So part of this story will be kind of Kate, even though she's kind of an ally, just now that she's got a non-binary kiddo, just and the pronouns and just that space, this is going to be a Kate's vulnerable journey to sort of, you know, I don't want to say change, but just better accept and understand. And this may help all of us as we're trying to better understand queer people and how to love and support them and see them as whole and complete. So is that okay for an introduction?
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. We both do.
And so it is, you are on.
So it's up to us, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start. This is Kate. Just for listeners, Morgan's a pseudonym. Morgan is not my child's name. I was an educator for 18 years, and I really like to protect the identity of minors. So this is just the name that I'm going to be using for them today. Richard, I also wanted to let you know that this podcast, Listen, Learn, Love, was a huge part of my journey. And when you said not necessarily to have me change through my journey, I do believe that there was a lot of change that happened. I think change is part of our life journey, our expected lives is to change and to grow. And your podcast has really helped me. So thank you for that. So just to share a little bit of my story, I was born into an active Latter-day Saint family. I was the fourth of six kids, three boys, three girls. And I identified a lot with Jan Brady, you know, from the Brady Bunch. I was like, oh my goodness, poor Jan. I relate. I feel for you, Jan. My mom was a traditional stay-at-home mom. My dad was a teacher, a music teacher at first, and then he was an instructor and a choir director at an institute of religion in Southern California. And back in those days, the church transferred institute teachers. And so our family was transferred from Southern California to Utah County. And we moved there right before my eighth birthday. And so I was baptized about a month after we moved into this new ward. Growing up, I was very strong and active in the church. I graduated from seminary. I received my Young Men in Excellence Award. I attended Institute where my dad taught. And When I was 21, I left the insulated bubble of Utah County and I served a 2-year Spanish speaking mission in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Wow.
And as we're going to be talking about LGBTQ plus issues, I just want to let you know how insulated my life was. I grew up in this bubble of Utah County, I feel, in the late 90s. And my first real life experience to the LGBTQ plus culture was in my first area, which was Miami Beach. And we were driving down Ocean Drive, my companion and I, and we would see these gay couples walking hand in hand down the street. And I remember thinking in my mind, I thought that only happened in the movies. I didn't think it was real life because of how isolated I was. In Miami, there were a lot of rainbow flags. And I legitimately asked my companion, what is that flag? Is that the city flag from Miami Beach? And she had to tell me, no, that represents, I mean, back then it was just gays. It represents the gay community. And I mean, that's how naive I was. I was there for New Year's Eve 2020, you know, Y2K. And
wow.
It was rumored that they were going to have the world's biggest gay New Year's party in the world there on Miami Beach. And so all of us missionaries had to stay indoors for that to kind of protect us from whatever was going on. And so I remember getting this exposure, but also understanding that, well, this is very, very different from what my life experience should be like. So, we'll come back to those issues a little bit later, but in my life, I returned home. I went to Utah State University. I obtained a degree in elementary education and I became an elementary school teacher. I began teaching in Salt Lake County and had some very severe depression. I was diagnosed with depression when I was about 14 years old, but I think one of life's greatest lessons that I had was to just not give up, to be resilient. And when things get hard, keep working at it. Did have a lot of help through therapy to get me through some things. And when I was feeling better, I, at the old maid age of 28, you know, you're an old maid in Utah, but at the age of 28, I finally met someone to marry. This man had been married before and divorced. And when he and I married, I became an instant stepmom to his 3 kids. And 11 months later, after we were married, this is when Morgan was born. Things were going okay in our marriage until they weren't. I struggled with depression a lot in my marriage, and I will own that. A lot of my mental health problems contributed to our decision to divorce. And I do want to let you know right now, though, that Morgan's dad and I have been co-parenting for quite a while since after our divorce. And he and I are on good terms. We're good friends and things are going well. And I think that's really helpful for not only us, but for Morgan as well, that we get along and there's really no major conflict in our relationship. Then married again. After I divorced, I was then married again, but only about 6.5 months after the divorce. It was way too fast. It really was. That's when I married this second husband, and he had been married and divorced before. And again, I became an instant stepmom to another 3 kids. And our marriage was just rocky. The second marriage was a lot rockier. I was emotionally vulnerable. I hadn't had time to heal from my divorce. I'd rushed into the marriage. Unfortunately, I had both my second husband and I did talk to some church leaders and said, we know we're going too fast, but they encouraged us to get married anyway. They thought it was better to speed up this wedding than to not, and then to sin. And in hindsight, when I look at it, I think that maybe that was some poor advice. Had we dated longer, I don't think we would have married at all. But we decided to give it a try. And I knew that my second husband's youngest was really, really good for Morgan. Do you want to talk a little bit about your stepsister?
Sure. My stepsister, Emma, we instantly hit it off because when I went to their house for the first time to meet my new stepdad, Emma had a cage with two rats, and I fell in love with these little rodents that were just crawling around in a cage. And I, because of that, I immediately asked, can I have a sleepover? Because, of course, little animals are gonna get on my good side. But since then, Emma has always been really close to me because all of my other siblings have been a lot older than I have. My older siblings are like getting married now and in their 30s even. So me being a little 16-year-old to have somebody close to my age was really nice. And we just had a lot of the same interests. So it was really helpful for me to have somebody.
And it was really great for me to look at this relationship saying, oh, this is great. We need to move forward in our relationship. And that was very, very helpful that both Morgan and Emma were such good friends. So Morgan's dad and I did split custody. So Morgan stayed with a different parent every other week. And again, our co-parenting was really good for the most part. And we made Morgan a priority. And we never used them as a pawn in our relationship. I taught elementary school and I enjoyed that benefit of seeing Morgan every day, even during those weeks when they were at their dad's house. And I even taught Morgan in third grade and Morgan called me Mrs. Mom in the class, which was also a lot of fun for me to get to know all of Morgan's friends. It was actually a really good experience. Now when Morgan was in middle school and I would take them to school, we would talk a lot more about LGBTQ issues on the ride. It was like a 20-minute commute to and from school. And at first, I remember Morgan coming out and saying, hey, Mom, I just need you to know that I'm an LGBTQ ally. And then later on, they were a kindness ambassador at this school. And Morgan told me about how there was going to be some kind of love and acceptance kindness week. And Morgan was putting out ideas for education for LGBTQ community within the middle school. I remember you even mentioned like this lesson on star-bellied sneetches from Dr. Seuss and how we wanted to accept the LGBTQ family as those with the stars upon thars, you know, from Dr. Seuss. And Morgan would tell me more about these LGBTQ flags. And so I could feel that Morgan was kind of just trying to testing the waters. And then I think it was when they were in eighth grade, I was driving them to school and Morgan said, Mom, I just need you to know I'm non-binary and pansexual and I want to go by they, them. Bye. And then they got out of the car to go to school. And I was left in shock, like, what? Because I had always thought that I was an LGBTQ ally. It was one thing when it was other people. I grew up in drama. I had a lot of friends who were gay and who were LGBTQ. It's one thing to love and accept them, but I found it was really different to accept in my own child. I really did. And I also remember it was maybe later that week. It was the beginning of the school year. And at the end of the school day, Morgan would come to my third grade classroom because they got out of school a little bit earlier. And I introduced Morgan to my third graders. Morgan came into the classroom and I said, hey, class, this is my daughter, Morgan. And she goes to school at such and such a school. And at the end, after the kids had all gone, Morgan came to me and kind of glared and said, it's they, them, Mom. And I knew what a challenge that was for me because teaching third graders was a challenge because I was teaching English and I knew that they, them was third person plural pronouns. And Morgan was clearly not third person plural. And I was also afraid as an educator of getting in trouble. Truth be told, I know I had heard stories of other teachers that would push their political agendas and would get in trouble. And so I kind of had to address Morgan saying, hey, I know this is important to you. I can't teach that to my kids at school. And truth be told, I'm not ready to call you by those pronouns yet either. I used like that power of yet, though. I'm a big believer in that in education, of being open-minded and knowing that no, I'm not there yet. But I don't think Morgan loved that response, did you? Anyhow, I just really didn't understand how to be a good Latter-day Saint and love my LGBTQ child. I learned from the church handbook that in the church, we need to use the pronouns that people were assigned at birth and despite their personal preference. And so this was one of those reasons where I struggled personally, but also that Morgan and I struggled. And we just didn't get along for a while. We also struggled with our position on the church because Morgan had decided at one point to leave the church. But I was still very much in. And I would bribe Morgan to attend these meetings when they just clearly didn't want to. And it kind of put a wedge in our relationship. I also thought that Emma was negatively affecting Morgan. I thought, my goodness, if it weren't for Emma, then I wouldn't have these challenges with my child. If it weren't for all of these kids at school that are influencing Morgan, I wouldn't have these challenges with my child. I was trying to put the blame elsewhere because it was so overwhelming when I put it on myself. At some point, I think it was maybe in 2021, maybe the first part of 2022, that's when I really, really sought to understand how to be a good Latter-day Saint and an advocate and an ally for Morgan. And so that's when I started listening to your podcast, Richard. I started listening to Listen, Learn, Love. And I found it so beautiful. And as we mentioned before we started this recording, I am a really big advocate of empathy. And I love the way that you empathize with people who really struggle with these issues, that you seek to understand their perspective, their point of view. And so I really, really valued your program. I'd also reached out to other LDS parents with LGBTQ youth. I spoke to my friends who had kids. I did my homework. I was working really hard and reading the literature and trying to understand, but it just wasn't coming very easily. Then, but before that, COVID hit. Morgan, do you want to tell a little bit about what that experience was like for you?
So around the time that COVID hit, I think was when we started having these struggles between my beliefs and her beliefs and, you know, my identity and all of that stuff. But I remember that when quarantine started, all of the churches shut down, or at least for the most part, to try and stop the spread. And the young women's activities were also stopped, which was really nice for me because growing up, I never felt fully accepted into the group with all of the other girls my age. And so being able to stay home and not have to go surround myself with people who I knew, if they knew who the real me was, probably wouldn't accept me. And so it was a really nice break to try or to finally understand what it was like to like be out without being forced in a way. But I could tell that my mom was struggling and all of that, but it gave me more courage to stand up and talk about my beliefs, which is why I think that's when I started expressing my opinions and all of that. So.
Yeah. And when the COVID lift was banned and church started again, at that point, pretty much everyone in my family decided that it was a lot more convenient to just not go to church. And I hated Sundays. I hated them. I dreaded them because I was really struggling in my marriage, in the second marriage. My family wouldn't really attend church with me. And I hated feeling like that failure as a mother, that all of these things were going wrong because of me. I hadn't done things correctly. So I would go to church. I would sit by myself in the pews. And then once church was done, rather than go home and be reminded of what a failure I was with these people that I kind of was struggling with, I would leave for the rest of the day. I would take the dogs. We would go for a hike. I would drive over to the parking lot of the nearest temple and I would just cry. I would just cry. I was in so much pain emotionally because things weren't working out. I was trying to be this righteous parent in Zion and everything was falling apart around me, or so I thought. And I took on a lot of that responsibility for myself. My marriage was deteriorating, but I just tried to hold on to that iron rod. I was white knuckling my way into the celestial kingdom. Dang it. I was going to make this happen. And that was also what I would try to do with Morgan. Like, I don't have control over my stepkids, but maybe I do have control over you.
Yeah. She sat me down and said, either you're going to go to church with me on Sundays or you're going to go to Young Women's. You have to choose either or.
Yeah. I just felt like your choices are not an option. And I didn't spend a lot of time listening or learning or really loving at that stage of our life. So we're going to fast forward to this last year. Just a year ago, my second husband decided he was going to take work out of state. And his youngest was scheduled to graduate from high school in May, but Morgan still had 2 years left. And I didn't think Morgan wanted to move out of state because they were about to be a junior, and it's hard to uproot a junior before their junior year and move them to another state where they'd be separated from their dad, from their friends, from everything that they knew. And so I asked my husband and I said, can you wait 2 years for this job change until after Morgan's out of high school? And he said, no. And really put me in a position where I had to choose between my husband and my only child.
I also want to say that it wasn't just me leaving my friends and family and everything. At the time, I was actually really scared to be alone with my mom and stepdad because their relationship was so bad at this point that I could physically feel the tension whenever I was at home. The only good part about being at the house was being around Emma. And so I was really scared to be forced into this home where I knew it wasn't gonna be healthy or good for anyone.
Mm-hmm. And Emma was going to go off to college, so it would have just been the three of us had we moved out of state. So I put a lot of time and effort into praying and making this decision where, do I choose my husband and move with him to support him in his job? Because he really did say, I'm going with or without you. Or was I going to stay with my child? And I had some friends within the church that said, you know what? You've only got 2 more years with Morgan, but you've made a covenant with your husband for time and all eternity. So you need to go with him. And I went to this city over spring break to visit and see what it would be like. And I loved it. And I felt like that was my answer. But at the same time, I was sick, just thinking that I would have to leave Morgan in some of their most important formative years of their lives, even though their life. I would come to them and say, hey, Morgan, I need you to know that we're going to FaceTime every day. We're going to make this work. I will fly out to see you. You will fly out to see me. We're going to make this work. And so that was the decision we made. We were going to be moving out of state. So I resigned from 18 years of teaching. I sold 18 years of, and got rid of 18 years of teaching supplies and decided that I would move. Then last spring, Morgan was in a play at the Pioneer Theater Company, a professional theater here in Utah. And it was a really powerful show. And in it, Morgan kind of got to play themselves. Even though it was scripted, the director and the playwright invited them to bring a little bit of their personality into it. And so I was trying to be really supportive. I remember trying to help you write your little bio for the program. And as it has to be in third person, I said, Morgan, how do you want this to be written? Do you want with they, them pronouns? And Morgan said, yeah. And so that was a really big stretch for me as a mom. And I said, all right, it's important for me to love you. And especially as I know I'm going to be leaving you for this, I'm going to be moving to out of state and leave you behind. I want to make sure that our last memories together are positive. So I helped you write this bio with they, them pronouns. Then we went and saw the play. And the actors and the staff and the production staff, everyone in this play used Morgan's pronouns, they, them. And I saw what a difference it made in my child when we went to the cast party and everyone was using this and Morgan just lit up. I mean, this was a different child than the one I saw at home when I was using, I was insisting that I use the pronouns that Morgan was born with. And so it was at the end of that first performance, I said, I don't care what's going to happen. I choose my child. And that moment I said, I will be using they, them from here on out. I even did a big Facebook post and said how important it was for me to accept my child and to use these pronouns and keep me accountable, everybody. I'm going to be using this from now. I'm going to make mistakes every now and then. Every now and then I do slip back into other pronouns, but I'm making an effort to let my child know how important they are to me. And so that play was so powerful for me. In early July, my husband left for job training out of state. He needed 2 months of training before being transferred to this other city. And I stayed behind. I had a summer semester of grad school that I was going to go to. And I felt like I needed to make sure the house was sold. I was going to pack it up. And then after Labor Day, I would join him at this new place. But in July, as he was gone, and I was really struggling with a lot of emotions, particularly with this decision to have to choose between him and my child, that's when my faith crisis came to a head while he was gone. And as I was commuting to and from school, I started listening to another podcast where the objective of the podcasters were to help Latter-day Saints become more nuanced, more loving, accepting members, very similar to what you do, Richard, in loving our community and people with differences. And I really felt like that was my objective. And I'm not going to go into details, but it was end of July that I just knew I couldn't be a part of the church any longer. And I called my husband up and I told, because he was out of state, and I said over the phone, I just need you to understand that I'm leaving the church and I think you need to know that. And he was surprised, but not too surprised, because I had shared some of my questions and challenges with him. Then he said, well, I choose to believe, I'm going to stay. Do you think we can make a mixed faith marriage work? And I said, no, we can't. And the reason is we don't have a solid foundation. Our marriage has been so rocky for the last 10 years of the 10 years that we've been married. And you really did put me in a position where I had to choose between you and my child. I don't think it's going to work. And we decided then to divorce. And so at that time, I call it like a midlife crisis, because I had just quit my job, left the church, decided to divorce my husband. I had a month to pack up my house to move to who knew where, because my plans had been to move out of state. And now I had to find a new place to live and I had to find a new job. I had everything happening all at once. And it was really challenging. But at the same time, I was so incredibly fortunate to have met so many wonderful people who just rushed to love me, to make me feel seen and heard. I also turned 45 that day. And for my 45th birthday, I did a great big Facebook post, because my gift to myself was to be authentically me. No apologies. This is who I am. And so I did a Facebook post and I said, dear everybody, it's my birthday. Let me tell you what's going on. My husband and I are not going to be married any longer. And I'm not moving out of state like everybody thought that we were. I'm going to stay here in Utah. I think you need to know that I'm leaving the church. Third, I need you to know that I need a place to live and I need to find a job. How can you help me? Because networking is important, right? And the vast, vast majority of people, both member, non-member, never member, but most of my family and friends reached out to me with love and support. And I loved that. I even said in my post, I'm not going to tell you why I left the church, but if you want to know, please ask. I'm happy to share that with you. I'm happy to share my faith journey. And I'd actually like to hear yours too. I'd like to hear where you're coming from as well. And I had about 8 people reach out to me and say, I mean, most of whom were still members of the church. And they said, I read your post. I really want to know what's going on? And so I wrote up a post sharing with a Mormon audience why I chose to leave the church, why I chose to step away. And Richard, I can't tell you how validating that was to have a member of the church say, "Why did you leave? I want to understand." And they don't have to agree with me. It's not my objective to have them make the same choices that I did, but just for someone to say, "I want to hear your story," is an incredible sign of love. And I love that that's what you do on this podcast. So just to let you know, I mean, this has been a great big year, a lot of changes in a short amount of time. In August of last year, I started a TikTok page and I named it, my handle is Midlife Exmo Mama, because I identify with all of those things. I was going through a midlife transition. I don't want to call it a crisis as much as it was a midlife transition. I still identify as an ex-Mormon because I'm still trying to find where I land spiritually. And I'm also a mama. I identify as this child's mom. I know it's kind of corny. Morgan's here laughing at my cheesy name, but it's been really valuable for me to create content to help me do this. And as I do this, my objective is not to tear people apart like you. I'm trying to build bridges. And just last month, in March of this year, David Archuleta came out with a song called Hell Together. And I don't know if you've spoken about this before, but in his song, he dedicated it to his mom, Lupe. And I've listened to his story where he said he came out as gay several years ago. And that was kind of a shock to everyone in the church. It was a shock to his mother. And then just last year, he decided to step away from the church. And his mom didn't talk to him for a few days after that was made public. And then she came back to him and said, "David, I just have thought about this a lot. And I need you to know that heaven would not be heaven without you. And I'm going to step away from the church as well. And if our consequences is that we go to hell, then we're going to go to hell together." And when I listened to this song for the first time, I just sobbed, because it was just such a huge parallel between David's journey with his mother and my journey with Morgan. And so I made a TikTok video about it just a few weeks ago. And already, I mean, as of this morning, it had 380,000 views. It's been the most viewed of my videos. And not just that, I have nearly 1,000 comments on this video, and they all, they're kind of categorized into some different categories. Like most people are validating, they're encouraging, they're congratulatory. They say, "Way to go, mom. You made the best choice by choosing your child and loving your child." But more tragically, I have so many people commenting saying, "I wish my parents were more like you. I came out as queer, or I left the church, and my parents chose their religion over me." I had one commenter said, "If I gave you my mom's phone number, would you call her for me?" Others say, "This healed something in me." There are several other people who didn't understand the context of the song. And they said, "I don't agree. I don't think you're going to go to hell, because this kind of love, this love for your child is what God's all about. God's all about love. And he would not punish you for loving your child. And he would not punish your child for being queer." The reason that I wanted to come onto this podcast and for Morgan to come onto this podcast was just to say, if you are a parent like me, or like I was, where it's really hard to love and accept your child when they come out as LGBTQ+, I think the best advice that we could give you is to listen, learn, and love from your child. If your child's left the church, that's the same advice. Listen, learn, love from them. And it's difficult work. It's difficult to kind of question everything that you've been taught and to unlearn some things that just are maybe a little bit more damaging, but it is the most important work that you can do. And then the message for your children, for those kids whose parents may have chosen a more conservative path, if they've maybe rejected you, have empathy for your parents, because they are unlearning some programming that you may not be familiar with. But it's important for you to recognize those small things that they do. I mean, because it's hard. It's hard. Recognize those small things and thank them. Also, those kids, please continue to advocate for yourself. Set healthy, loving boundaries that will keep you safe and be the most authentic version that you can be. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I am a firm believer in don't try to change people and don't tell them who they are without first letting them express to you who they are and assuming who they might be just based off of your ideas and your beliefs. Take time to listen and understand, because it can be very helpful to those who are in situations like me.
Did you feel as though I was not listening to you at any part of our journey?
Very much so.
Earlier on, right?
Yeah.
And I recognize that now. I was pretty close-minded. I felt like as the parent, I had to be the one who was right. I knew everything and my child didn't. And that's what caused a lot of friction in our relationship. But since we've made these changes and we've had these conversations, we've been more open. I think our relationship is probably better than it's ever been. Right? Okay. Yes, Morgan is nodding their head. They can't see.
Sorry.
So that's our story. And we're sticking to it.
Thanks to both of you. I wrote down some things I want to go back through. And you've both done such a great job. I'd love to ask Morgan a couple questions before I circle back to some of the things Kate shared. And this is unscripted. So what gives you hope? I mean, I worry that some queer kids are suicidal or have suicidal ideation, and you're at a tender teenage age and you may or may not have these feelings, but what gives you hope in your future? And that may help parents and your friends. Just, we want to do things that create hope. So what gives you hope? And talk a little bit about your dreams and stuff like that, Morgan.
I see a lot of reports in the news about queer people being killed or bills being passed about taking away rights, which is very scary. But the more that I look back on the past and see how damaging it was back then as compared to how normalized it's gotten today, just makes me feel like just the more time and the more work that queer people like put into expressing themselves and putting out their voice and saying, hey, we're not wrong, we're just who we are, can really change the future and just make the world an overall more loving place, not for just queer people, but for all sorts of just communities that have been discriminated. But also having a community is really good. I've had great friends ever since elementary school who have also come out as queer. And I find it very funny because that's how it is with a lot of queer people. They just tend to gravitate towards each other before you even know. And so just having a community and having my mom accept me is really helpful as well. I am a little bit different than what I see most people. I kind of, when it comes to me being queer, I don't care too much about what other people think. I think that's why I was so open to telling my mom that I was like, oh yeah, this is me, bye, is because I believe that if people
don't accept me for who I am, then I don't want to be around them. So I'm a little bit different in the way that I don't want to be around people who don't accept me instead of trying so hard to get people to accept me. And I think that is a good way of thinking for a lot of people, but I know how hard it can be to be isolated if you don't have that community that I was so grateful of having, or so I had. Yeah.
That's a really good answer, Morgan. And I love you mentioning the legislation. You live in Utah, and there's obviously a lot of legislation that feels really unsafe for LGBTQ people, and allies are aware of this and worried. But I love then you pivoted, you didn't dismiss the reality of that and the pain of that. You talked about this kind of long trajectory, this long arc of acceptance that we've made progress. Talk to, and you've kind of done this, talk to listeners that are younger and queer and might be suicidal. You may have had friends open up to you about feelings of suicidal ideation. What do you tell people that are suicidal, or just really queer people that are really, really sad?
It's very different for everybody. Not everyone has the same reasonings for being suicidal. They could have mental health issues, they could have losses in their family, whether that be to death or to just them not accepting. Getting kicked out is a lot more common than it should be. But honestly, just finding people who can listen to you. Like, I really think that having a community is really good, because if you're by yourself and if you don't open up to people who you know can help you, then that's just gonna dig a deeper hole, and it's just going to get worse. If you don't try to let other people in and help you, because you're not alone. And I know it may feel that way, and it may be really scary to not know quite who you are and not know if your own family will accept you. But if you do find those people who do accept you, don't just stay quiet. They care about you, and so open up.
Really thoughtful, mature answers. This is kind of painful because I don't want to bring up pain, but what would you say to people that say, Morgan, you're really not non-binary, you're not pansexual, you're just hanging out with the wrong crowd, and you're sort of just getting caught up in the latest trend of the day, and you're just confused? So I hate to ask you that question, but because you've probably heard that before, but maybe you could, I think you have the maturity to handle that question and give us an answer.
Honestly, those people are mostly me. I often tell myself that I'm just making this up, that that's not who I really am, that social media has just made this seem like a hip and cool thing now that representation is more out there, and that I'm just hopping along the trend, that I really am just a cis straight person who just wants to try and be like my friends who seem so much cooler than I am. But honestly, I think that being a teenager, especially, you know, being a teenager, that's the whole point of being a teenager, is finding out who you are. So when other people tell you you don't know who you are, you can say, yeah, I definitely don't know who I am, because I haven't lived that long. But I do feel that there is something about this that feels right to me, and that makes me happy and comfortable as myself. So why is that so wrong? If I do end up not being non-binary in the future, if I do say, hey, that's not the label that fits me anymore, then it can still be powerful to know that in the moment, it made me feel comfortable with not knowing, with the unsurety of who I am in this moment. It made me feel grounded and more comfortable with myself, know me better. And so, yeah, I don't think that people should focus too much on forcing a label upon themselves if they feel weird. I want people to feel open to changing if anything happens, but knowing that labels are very helpful in finding out who you are, and that, sure, we may be told that we're wrong, but why should it be wrong if it makes us feel better?
It's a really thoughtful, mature answer. Unscripted, but I love just the maturity of your answer and even the possibility that you may change labels. I wrote in my first book, if someone changed, sometimes someone will go from gay or lesbian to trans. And I don't say, let's just don't roll our eyes and think, oh, here we go again. Let's validate their experiences, their learning. And only, you know, Morgan can tell us about how Morgan's feeling. And I think when we honor somebody's journey, it helps them just own that, because we're not being prescriptive. And then allows them to just continue to own their journey without having to react to everybody's expectations about them.
Add to that, Richard, I think of how, everyone changes their labels in life. You go from an infant, now you're a toddler, now you're a child, now you're a teenager, now you're a young adult. I mean, I've been a student, I've been a teacher, I've been a mom, I've been a divorcee. I mean, your labels change all of the time in life. And so when a teenager or even an adult is still figuring out who they are, it's okay for those labels to change, because those labels change for everyone in their lives.
It's only seen as wrong or weird because it's not something that is seen as normal or what people are used to. Mm-hmm. The unknown is scary. And so people do roll their eyes because they think, oh, well, just another one of these weirdos doing this thing again, instead of realizing, oh, hey, I had a phase where I thought that this was who I am, and I thought that this is what I was going to be when I grow up. And then that didn't end up how it was for me, but it's just different because it's not their personal experience.
It's really well said. And, you know, I don't have any queer kids listeners, so I can't talk to this firsthand, but I think, you know, if you're worried about honoring your kids, they, them label, for thinking this is a phase, I'd probably not think that. I'd probably just honor them where they are. And not in a transactional way that you're going to not honor it, secretly hoping it's a phase and you're doing the right thing to end this phase. I just think this non-transactional, non-agenda love and honoring allows our kids to chart their way. And if this isn't a manipulative comment, but if they feel their label might change and you've honored their label, I think it's easier, and they felt your non-transactional, non-agenda love, I think it's easier for them to change. I don't want to say people should change or this is a phase in saying that, but if, you know, Morgan sort of mentioned maybe this, I will have a different label someday. And I don't think that's because Morgan's confused now and we've done her, you know, they a disservice. I just think it's just part of a life journey. So I love, you said something earlier, Kate. These are some of the things I wrote down from Kate's segment, listeners. You said this very off the cuff, but it was very powerful. Your choices, meaning Morgan's, are not an option at the beginning of your phase. Pretty powerful. And then your Facebook post about they, them. And I wondered how Morgan felt reading her mom being public on Facebook about they, them. I don't know if you're aware of that post, if you're on Facebook. And then I loved lots of grace about just people walking different journeys. Listeners, I wrote a chapter in my third book, which I'll put in the show notes, is, you know, how to treat people who leave the church. And it's not an invitation to leave the church. It's an invitation to all the example Kate's doing is just show grace to everybody on the road they're walking. and still see us all as the same in human family, and leave the fear we have about people that we love that aren't in the church at the feet of our heavenly parents and our Savior. They're their children first, and just say, what can I do? Well, I can probably control the relationship. If it's a two-way street that both people want to have a relationship, I can preserve the relationship. And so these people that reached out to you, Kate, and said, I want to hear your story. Of these are Latter-day Saint people that wanted to hear your story. To me, there's a lot of healing and grace in that. And I certainly wasn't able to do that 10 years ago, but it's a little easier for me to do that now, because I'm grounded where I am, but I can honor individual journeys. I wanted to comment on David Archuleta and the song, because I've never done that yet in the podcast, Hell Together. I'm very consistent with what you've talked about. And my first thought is just to honor, to thank David for the decades of service he's given to the church. He served a mission, all of the work he's done, the songs he's created, the content of healing and hope and coming into Christ, the tithing he's probably paid. I don't have access to his tithing records, but he had a temple recommend, so I assume. And so my first reaction is to thank David for all he's done for our faith community. And then second reaction is to honor the complexity of his journey as a gay Latter-day Saint and doing everything he could to fit in. And then third is to honor his decision to leave the church and just say, I'm not going to say David's the hero one day and the villain the next day. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say anything in a judgment way around David. I'm just, and I don't have a relationship with David, so I'm not speaking as if I know David personally. And I'm just going to leave this at the feet of our heavenly parents and our Savior, and honor David as he's making his journey. Now, some have sort of said, well, Hell Together, you know, isn't really our doctrine because there isn't hell. And my feeling is I think that's more figurative of the separation that you talked about, Kate. You don't want to be separated, and David's mother didn't want to be separated from David. So it's more the separation that you talked about and David's mom talked about. So I don't want to be like pull David's song apart and say it's not doctrinally accurate because we don't believe in hell. I think we do believe in a kind of a figurative hell, possibly that people will be different kingdoms in the next life, own family members. Now, I personally don't believe that. I think I realize that's probably our doctrine that we'll be in different kingdoms, but I just think at the end of the day, if you're grieving somebody that's not in the church, that leave that at the feet of your heavenly parents and just do all you can do. Don't determine right now in earth life where someone's going to be in the next kingdom. I call it grieving now a future outcome that we don't know for sure. And so I honor David and his song, and he continues to bless people with his musical talents. And I'm just not going to pass any judgment on David and where he is and how he's using his talents and where his mother is. And that's just my feeling about David. Some are able, I wrote down here, there's a lot of, I don't want to be like Kate didn't do this right, because a lot of parents do leave the church when their kid leaves the church, and a lot of parents don't leave the church when their kids leave the church. And I don't want to elevate one over the other. I'll invite people to stay in the church, but also just say, you know, this is your story and what you felt was best for you and your journey and going through a faith crisis. And I think it's a really mature approach, because probably some pain and some anger as you separate yourself from the church. And pain is a primary emotion that leads to anger. And sometimes that's directed at people in the church or the church. And you have managed that pretty well. And I think partly, you know, active members honoring your journey kind of helps mute the anger and finds healing a little bit, as you still have people that love you and honor your journey and don't use Bible verses to say you're the tares or the wheat or you're mm-hmm. Satan that's been sifted at the last day. And I just think that if we can say kind things to people, it helps them maybe not get as angry as they could about the church. And if we say kind things, I think that dials down the temperature a little bit that needs to be done in our community. So not everybody that leaves the church kind of follows your example. There's some really angry people that want everybody else to leave the church with them. And so I just recognize there's a range there. That. So you're up, Kate.
Can I just talk on that for just a second? I think when leaving the church, you're grieving your identity. I mean, it's a grief process. I was an active Latter-day Saint for 45 years of my life. And that was a huge part of who I was. And then to make this decision, I'm leaving so much of who I was and my community behind me. That's a loss, and there's grief associated with that grief. And anger is a natural emotion with grief. And I'm hoping that those people who are in that angry phase, it's okay that they're feeling angry. It's
true.
100% okay for them to feel angry. But my hope for them is that that they can move on and they can find peace and healing after that process.
Anything else either of you'd like to say?
I think that we've had a really great conversation here, and we're so grateful that you've given us the opportunity to be here, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for inviting us to be here.
And again, I'm just so impressed with the work that you do, that you're creating this platform for people to share their stories, and that you are so good. You practice what you preach, you listen, you learn, and you love. And that has been very, very helpful for us. And I'm hoping that this message will reach more people and help them to do the same. So thanks again.
One of the things I wanted to mention, listeners, that I wrote down at the very beginning, now I'm mentioning at the end, is my own journey to honor they, them, because, and you've kind of said this, when I think of they, them, I think of more than one person. And so I don't do that anymore. I recognize Morgan is one person, one physical person that is non-binary. So they, them reflects Morgan's identity. And so I just honor that. It doesn't cost me anything. It's not even against church teachings, as far as I know, to honor somebody's pronouns. I used to probably think, well, okay, what is your biological sex? What does it say on your birth certificate? But now I try not to do that, listeners. I think that just spends my mental energy and more mental capital on a place that's not needed. I just honor Morgan as they, them. I'm not trying to think about the rest of that, because then I can just think about how can I love and support Morgan and talk about their future, the things that are interesting to them now. I'm in this space for mostly to help people that are suicidal not die by suicide and to give them hope about their future. And Morgan has answered that question really well for others and in their own life. So that's a little bit about my journey. I'm in my 60s to try to understand anything new to me and try to do the right thing to bring more hope and healing to others. In the show notes, we'll link to Kate's TikTok channel so people can check that out. I'll link to that chapter in my book. It'll be a Dropbox link, because if you want to read the chapter on how to treat people that leave the church, it's a link to that, so you can just have it free. The principles are just the principles that we're talking about in this podcast of try to reduce divisiveness and keep us together. And just invite, you to act on your impressions you felt in your area of influence to better support those in our community. So anything else, Kate or Morgan, that comes to mind? Okay.
No.
You two are great. No. And so this is Morgan and Kate Kendrick signing and Richard Osler signing off from another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love. Mm-hmm.